This is Infidel One. Offending Coyote Down. Offending Coyote Down. Roger that.
Welcome to Trapping Radio. We're proud, organic, free-range, wild fur farmers of North America.
Let me tell you a little story about how I was raised. Every day work, every day pray. Got family, friends, yeah, everybody sins. A winner never quits, and a quitter never wins. Help folks in need, don't fall for greed. A jealous man is weak, so think before you speak. If you love them, let them know. If you hate, let it go. Fast can be fun, but sometimes you need slow. God is all good, the devil is so real. So listen up, y'all, cause this is how I feel. I won't back up, I don't back down. I've been raised up to stand my ground. Take my job, but not my guns. Tax my trip till I ain't got none. Except for the good Lord up above. I answer to no one.
Now let's cover our sponsors. They do a lot to help support Trapping Radio. So I'm asking you guys out there and gals to help support our sponsors as they keep Trapping Radio on the air. First sponsors, Oki Cable and Trap Supply. Jeb's the owner of this. He's out of Oklahoma. Super guy. You'll not meet anybody nicer. It's somebody you're going to want to deal with. You can reach him at oktrapsupply.com. You can give Jeb a call at 918-429-4648. Not only does he do Trap Supply guys, he's a fur buyer, so if you're around the Oklahoma or surrounding states, give him a call with your fur. When you need stuff, give him a call and he'll get it out to you as soon as he can. Our second sponsor is F&T Fur Harvesters Trading Post. Everything you need for trapping, hunting with hounds, and predator calling. Guys, if you're into trapping fur, hunting fur, chasing fur with dogs, you're not going to be able to think of hardly anything that you can't get from F&T. You can reach them at fntpost.com. You can also give them a call at 989-727-8727. Whatever you want, F&T's got. Wildlife Control Supplies, proven solutions for wildlife control, delivering value, expertise, and products to the wildlife individual. If you're in the ADC business, control business, even fur trapping, you need to look at these guys' website. Top-notch company. Have everything you would want, even the odd stuff that ADC guys are looking for. You can reach them at wildlifecontrolsupplies.com. You can give them a call at 877-684-7262. International number is 860-844-0101. If you're a wildlife control professional, you need to have Wildlife Control Supplies as one of your favorites on your computer or your phone, because when you come across something that you need specialized equipment, Alan will get it right out to you. Now let's go trapping.
See, I'm a flag flying, Bible toting son of a gun. Yeah, I'm hell on the heart, just a rebel on the run. Scared, don't know it, fear, don't feel it. The truth is the light, sometimes you gotta fight. Good beats bad, right beats wrong. I'm a barroom preacher and this is my song. I'm climbing for the top, representing for the country. I'm the people's champ, right out to deer camp. Shotgun toter, Republican voter. Hank Jr. supporter, let's protect our border. To hell with anyone who don't believe in the USA. Cause this is what I say. I won't back up, I don't back down. I've been raised up to stand my ground. Take my job, but not my guns. Tax my check till I ain't.
Hello, folks, and welcome to Trapping Across America. My name is Chip Davis, and I will be sitting in with you once again tonight as guest host of Trapping Radio. Clint called me a couple of days ago, and many of you know I filled in for him last night on the Rants of a Free Trapper / Strong Man Strong podcast. It's something a little bit new. If you don't follow that podcast, Clint's about to kind of change the format a little bit, and last night was supposed to have been the first episode of the new podcast that's going to be called Man Strong podcast. It's going to be real interesting. So you may want to start tuning into those. They will air on Thursday evenings. And of course, the Trapping Radio, as we all know, will continue to air on Fridays. Clint does have some family issues that he's dealing with right now. I don't want to go into that. It's really not my place to inform you of that. Clint will be letting you know. He is fine. Cindy's fine. But they've just had some real unfortunate circumstances with their family that they've had to deal with. And so just keep those guys in your prayers over the next couple of two or three days as they deal with some pretty tough stuff. So and I'll let Clint fill you in on all the details and whatever he wants to do a little later on. But just kind of remember those guys over the next few days, and I'm sure they would really, really appreciate it. So when he called, he asked me if I would fill in for him while he's kind of taking care of some other things, and I told him I would be glad to, because I love hanging out with you guys. This is really, really something I truly enjoy doing, is hanging out with my brother and sister trappers out there and doing this podcast. Many of you let me know that you enjoy them, and I certainly do appreciate that. Those words of encouragement really are what keeps us going with this thing, kind of drives us, and it's worth it. So I truly, truly enjoy doing them, and this is this is one of the highlights when I have opportunity to fill in. Well, I think we got a pretty neat show. We're going to talk about several different things here and kind of be all over the board. It is late and it's been pretty warm here, so I'm going to periodically break here to squeak on this water here a time or two. So just kind of bear with me as I do that. But before we get started, you just heard the list of the sponsors, and that was the old list that I still like to play when I host Trapping Radio. But also remember, we've added two new ones that are not included on that original list, and those are Jeff Dunlap, the Death Dealer, with Dunlap Lures, and also Alan with Funky Trap Tags and Supplies, who's also the sole sponsor for the ranch. So all these sponsors are great guys. They will do you right. A lot of people this time of the year, I see it in my business. I run Expand-A-Pan, and we have a little spike in sales this time of the year. I think a lot of guys pull their traps, they reorder their supplies or equipment that they used up. Refurbish and go over their stuff. It's a really great time to do it right after the season's over with. There's a lot of pluses there, because what you broke or what got torn up or bent or needs replacing is fresh on your mind. You can get those knocked out right now. If you, like a lot of us, and wait until fall to refurbish your equipment, sometimes you may not remember that one bent dog on that last coyote catch, or that base plate needs a little work on this trap, or whatever the case may be, or I'm almost out of earth anchors, or I need to add some chain, or whatever. Give these sponsors of Trapping Radio a chance at your business, because if you enjoy the show, they are the ones collectively, all these sponsors that you just heard, they're the ones that are making this program free. And there's all kind of a wealth of information through 300 some odd episodes of Trapper Radio. And so give these sponsors a try and a shot at your business, and as you get ready to order supplies and redo equipment and that sort of thing. So, guys, I've got a couple of things I want to get started with, and then we're gonna go talk about some coyote sets tonight. First thing is Fur Bearers Unlimited. There is a banquet coming up in Crossville, Tennessee, on April the 13th. That is, I believe, at the fairgrounds there in Crossville. And Tennessee, actually, if you don't know what FBU is, Fur Bearers Unlimited, they're kind of a sister organization to NTA, and they're really the fundraising branch of that, if you will. This banquet that they'll have is going to be similar. Most everybody is familiar with a National Wild Turkey Federation banquet or a Ducks Unlimited banquet or Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation or any of those type things. That's going to be the atmosphere. There'll be a live auction, silent auctions probably going on, lots of raffles, games, different things like that. It's a great way to raise money to defend trapping in different states. It just so happened that this most recent, probably 3 to 4 weeks, there was a bill introduced in the Tennessee legislature that would have severely damaged trapping had it gone through and had it passed. Because Tennessee has been raising money for quite a while and having these FBU banquets there, then they were prepared. They could immediately take action right there, build that war chest, and be ready when the time came. Guys, Tennessee's in the deep south. You know, we're having issues all the way down here. It's coming to every state in America before it's over with. These antis are every bit, if not more so, passionate about their views as we are about our right to preserve trapping and continue to see it free and unimpeded, but they are equally as determined to take it away from us. And that's why we need to support the different associations, whether it be state associations or NTA, and also FBU as they raise funds to help NTA. And it's not through donation. This is more through a banquet style setting that's really, really enjoyable. So if you're anywhere in that, southeast region of the United States, really, but certainly Tennessee, Kentucky, the Carolinas, even Georgia, Alabama, Mississippi, you may want to mark off the April the 13th on your calendar. Crossville is not too far away to drive. Let's pack that place out and raise a lot of dollars for Fur Bearers Unlimited, because that money does in fact go straight back into preserving trapping and keeping it free for all of us. While I'm talking about FBU, there's Maryland. Actually, the state of Maryland has a banquet also on April the 6th, and the state of Mississippi and also the state of Idaho are slated to have events this fall. I think as FBU grows, you're going to see more and more of these, and so that will be something to look for. If you're interested in putting on one of these FBU banquets, there's some pretty neat splits there, and we can certainly inform you of how that works. If there's not currently a Fur Bearers Unlimited banquet in your state and your association would like to consider putting one of those on, contact me. You can get in touch with me at expandapantraps.com. My personal cell phone number is listed on there, and you're welcome to call if you need further information about how to get started with that, because we can sure hook you up. We need one of these in every state, really and truly. This is the opportunity we have to raise some significant dollars to defend and preserve trapping right there. Additionally, FBU will also have a event at the NTA Western Regional, which is the 7th and the 8th of June. And of course, by that time, a lot of the conventions will be getting kicked off. I know FTA is right in that same neighborhood. NTA is in the early to mid part of July in Springfield, Missouri this year. And there will be a lot of other state associations and having conventions all across the summer months and into the fall as well. So we're gonna have quite a full slate of those. I know Clint is planning on making quite a few conventions this year too. I don't have his official list. I know Jeff Dunlap will make a lot of them. Alan will make a lot of them. Several of the different sponsors of Trapper Radio, F&T will be at quite a few of those as well. Oki and a lot of the sponsors will be at these. So look those guys up all over. All right, guys. Well, moving on. Excuse me. I had when Clint asked me, this is not spur of the moment, but a couple of days ago, He asked if I'd cover the show, and he actually asked if I'd cover last night's rant and tonight's trapping radio show. So I gladly said yeah, and I really didn't know what I was going to talk about on many of them. So I actually texted our little group last night, and which is myself and Clint, a couple other guys are in there, and I gave them the option. I said, what would you guys rather hear, sneaky coyote sets or turkey hunting? Because it is spring, and I have our turkey season is open, and I think I've been every day for pushing 20 days now. Maybe not quite 20, but we're going on our third week if you count youth season too, and which I've got a young'un that still qualifies for youth season. So we went several of those days, and if I sound tired or get delirious or just go to sleep and start snoring on you here in a second, you'll know why. I am running on about 5 hours of sleep a night for 18, 19, 20 days straight here. So and as a result, this show actually may be slightly shorter than it typically would be, because I pretty soon need to get off here and go to bed if I'm gonna get going. I'm nearing my limit here in Mississippi, and I've got a couple other states to hunt in as well. So I go really, really hard when I go. I don't know how to halfway do anything. It's kind of the way my trapping is. If I trap, I don't feel like I'm really trapping unless I can get 100 sets out. And this, I wish I could be one of the guys that goes put six out and just sits there while enjoys it. That would be great. But I'm not that way. I've got to go full in or not go. One of the two, it seems like. And that's just kind of the way I've always been. So we're going to talk a little bit about turkey hunting, and which has absolutely nothing to do with trapping, although there are some parallels to it. And then I do want to finish up by talking about some different coyote sets that I use and some things that I played with this year and wanted to try on several different places, different jobs. As many of you know, we were soaking wet through our whole entire trapping season. It rained every single week for 3 months, I think. And my trapping opportunities, like many, many people around the country, were extremely diminished just due to the weather. But I had a list of things that I tried and I wanted to try, and I'm going to continue to try. So we'll cover some of those. Let's talk real quick about, I'm going to tell you a turkey story that happened to me. I believe this was day before yesterday morning. There's so many parallels in turkey hunting and trapping, and I think that they result really at their core down to one thing. Trapping and turkey hunting also is a lot less to do with luck than it is to do with a thought process and a thinking game. Many, many other forms of sport hunting and that sort of thing have a lot to do with luck. You can put a deer stand up, and you can go and you can sit in that deer stand, and you can read your wind, and that's fine, and you can read your sign, and that's fine, but still, if that deer gets up and walks in front of that stand and gives you a shot, or if he doesn't, there's a lot of luck involved in that. You know, it's you know, maybe you pattern him, maybe you know he's coming through there certain times, but still, you know, you really don't have control of whether the deer gets up and walks in front of your stand or not. That's quite a bit different than trapping. You know, with trapping, you got to read the sign. You're not going to catch that animal unless you take an action to do that. You've got to set that trap. You've got to be there. You've got to put steel in the ground or hang a snare or whatever the case may be. Put a cage out, whatever, and you've got to do your job properly with your lure and your bait combination, or if it's a blind set or whatever it is, you've got to have a decent amount of skill set even to get started in trapping. And that's much, much the same with turkey hunting. You can, and there have been turkeys killed by just what I call deer hunting them, where you basically go, you've seen turkeys there, you sit there, and that's all you do. When one walks by, you shoot him, and that's okay, I guess, if that's legal. That's not my definition of turkey hunting. Turkey hunting, to so much of it involves sport, much like trapping, where it's a reactive, it's not a luck thing. It's and I'm not saying it's a skill thing, but you have input into the outcome, and you know you have to make decisions on the move. Do you call? Do you not call? Do you circle? Do you get in front of him, or is he headed the right direction? Anyway, so many things that can happen and can go on. So I got on some turkeys 2 days ago, and I figured out which direction they were going. I actually trapped this place. It's a huge, huge high fence area. I was like 5,500 acres, which for down south, that's really, really big for, you know, for a high fence job. And I've trapped it. I know the property extremely well. I saw the turkeys, and I wasn't sure they were on the move at that time, so I kind of went to them and set up and didn't call very, very much. I just wanted to give them an opportunity to come to me if they were inclined to, and they did not. There were actually five hens and two gobblers, two big long-beard gobblers there, and that's exactly what I was hunting for. And so when I was kind of rationalizing this out and putting two and two together in my head, and I said, I bet you they're going back toward the river and where the property kind of eventually corners back there. And so I kind of eased out of there, made a big loop around, and kind of came back and could see a road that went all the way down there where I had thought that the turkeys were probably going anyway. And sure enough, there they were about a quarter mile from me. The two gobblers were strutting, the hens were kind of feeding around there, and I lay there or sat there, watched them long enough to figure out the direction of travel, what they were doing. And like I said, I've trapped the property. I've been on it multiple years during turkey season, so I had a pretty good idea where I need to be. Now, it entailed a big, huge move. They're a quarter mile away from me. I had to use the road system. I had to go way around and loop all the way almost around the property and come back and get in front of them. And that's exactly what I did. At that point, I stalked up to the corner, and I was super, super quiet. Now, I mean, this is walk two or three steps, make sure I'm not going to bump into them, and walk two or three more steps. And when I finally got around there, I couldn't see the turkeys. I don't know where they went. And I set up, I soft called, light called, whatever. And I said, well, this is one of those things. You just got whipped by the turkeys. That's usual. And that's okay, because I get whipped more than I win. And that's what makes it fun. So I decided, you know, I missed them somewhere. Maybe they cut through the woods, something. So I'm going to ease back to the buggy and get on out of here. By this time, it's already getting late, late, late. And I've already wasted most of the morning. It's nearing lunchtime. And so I start out. I mentioned this is a high fence job when I trap it, or high fence property. Turkeys can absolutely fly over the fence. It's no problem most of the time. So I'm walking out, and there's actually a double corner in the fence there. It makes a 90-degree turn. It goes about 300 yards and makes another 90-degree turn, and then keeps on going straight for a long, long ways after that. So I made the first 90-degree turn, and I'm bebopping back to the buggy, and not really a whole lot of concern. I'm thinking about what we're going to do this afternoon on the job site and different things. And I ran the second turkey, and there's one of the big gobblers standing there, except for he hadn't seen me, so I just kind of melt down to the ground. And this corner that I'm talking about was not really a 90. It's just a real slight corner in the fence. Now, the fence is probably 18 feet tall, something in that neighborhood. I don't know that it's 18, it may be 15 feet tall, but it's a pretty good size game fence. The bottom squares are probably 1.5 inches tall by maybe 3 inches wide, and they get progressively bigger up to about 4x4 squares on top of the game fence. So it's a big old thing, you know, it takes some effort. Well, so I see the turkey, and I just melt down to the ground, and I get laid all the way to the ground on my belly, and we got binoculars on, get my face mask on, get my gloves on, my gun up in front of me, and everything is set, and I have not spooked the turkey, which that was kind of miraculous in and of itself that I didn't bump that turkey while I was doing that. So I sit here and watch the turkey. The turkey is obviously trying to get to the other side of the fence, and he runs into it. And he'll put his head through it, and he obviously can't go through the fence. So he back up, and he'll walk 15 yards down the fence further away, and he'll do the same thing. His head will go through the fence. He'll bump it with his shoulders or wing butts. Turkeys, I guess, don't have shoulders, do they? But back out, and he'll walk toward me closer, 15, 20 yards. I get my rangefinder out of my pack, and I'm thinking, this has to be the dumbest turkey in the state of Mississippi. And he does this back and forth over and over, minute after minute after minute, until finally I do all kind of moves. I was able to get my binoculars up, watch him, you know, focus in on him, range in the turkey's 135 yards exactly, you know, and he goes, you know, back and forth, literally spends a solid hour trying to walk through this fence. And so I'm thinking, I can't call because I'm laying here. I don't even have a blade of grass. This is a smooth dirt road, no cover whatsoever. I'm 30 yards to get to the timber. You know, across the fence is another 30 yards of just dirt. And I have nothing to hide behind besides just laid on my belly. And so I even get my phone out because the turkey's just far enough away. I can be real slow and make some moves. And I text a buddy of mine that is a big turkey hunter as well, and I asked him, I said, look, I'm facing something I've never seen before here, and I'm pinned down, I'm in the middle of the dirt road, and I've got the dumbest turkey in the world. I don't know, what are you doing here? Are you calling to him, or are you just taking a chance to try to crawl toward the timber? Okay, you're going to get seen if you call to him. He's going to, I mean, there you're the only thing in the road there, laying there as a human lump, and So my buddy kind of texts me back and he says, I don't know either. We were laughing about it. And he said, he can't be too smart if he spent an hour trying to go through the fence when it's a solid fence there anyway. So I decided to call. So I eased the mouth, called my mouth, and I called the turkey pretty heavy and not really knowing what he was going to do. I was just kind of clueless. I was along for the ride. So sure enough, he folds up and quits trying to go through the fence and turns, starts strutting and struts straight to me until he gets to about 75 yards. And I'm shooting a turkey cannon. I can absolutely roll one up at 60 yards every single, just dump him every single time I pull the trigger. He's 15 yards from where I can comfortably harvest this turkey. And he turns and goes in the woods and starts looking for the hen. And before you know it, he just meanders off through the woods and I never see him again. And I'm thinking, how brilliant am I to get just absolutely stepped on by the dumbest turkey in the whole entire state? So that's kind of how my luck goes. Well, the story isn't even quite over with yet. I get up and I start making my way out, gather all my stuff up. I'm feeling totally dejected here, but I'm laughing at myself too because I saw a heck of a show and with him strutting all the way up there to me, and my heart was pounding. I thought I was fixing to bust one. And long story short, I'm kind of laughing at myself more than I am anything. I start out. I get to the same spot where the turkey was. So by this time, another probably 15 minutes has elapsed since I have not seen the turkey anymore. And so I get to the corner that he was trying to go through the fence on, and there's just so many turkey tracks. I had to take a picture of that. So I grabbed my phone, took that picture, walked three more steps, and around the corner, there he stood, 30 yards. I mean, in the nothing but air between me and him. We see each other just about the same time. He turns to run. I just kind of rolled my shotgun off my shoulder, and I said, you know, I legitimately got beat by you when I called you the dumbest turkey in the state. I just don't have it in my heart to roll you up and shoot you in the back of the head at 30 yards as a cheap shot. I said, you know, you won the battle. Now, the war is not over. I'm going to win the war. I intend to. But I did lose the battle, and I felt like he probably deserved to live another day or two. So that's my turkey hunting story. I got whooped by one that couldn't figure out how to fly over a fence. And so at any rate, that was that. So I sure do love chasing turkeys, and that's just one of many, many episodes there I think I remember the ones that I did not shoot, especially when I got legitimately whipped and roughed up, than I do a lot of the ones that I have harvested. And we get our share, so it's no big deal. We will this year. It's sooner or later we'll stumble up across them, so it's no big deal. Well, the next thing I want to talk about, what I was working on some throughout this trapping season, was what I kind of jokingly refer to as sneaky sets. And I'm not sure where I even heard that term, or maybe I even came up with that. I don't know. But trick sets, a lot of people call them. I know one of the early things I learned from in trapping was back in the, gosh, I guess it was the late 80s. I got access to some Craig O'Gorman videotapes. They were VHS at the time. That's all, because I guess that we didn't even have DVDs back then. It was all we had to watch anything on, was VHS tapes. And I remember one particular video that Craig put out, and he called it something like Tricks for Tricky Coats or Tricks for Hard Coats or something like Smart Coats. I forget what he called it. Tricks and Tips for Tricky Coats. I forget. But anyway, this is probably where I first started thinking along those lines. And at that time, we were just picking up a few coats up until, you know, my career trapping had pretty much consisted of fox up until that time, or raccoon on dry land. We had very, very, very few coats, but they were starting to get to our area by then, and we were, you know, starting to, you know, figure out, hey, we need to learn how to catch these things. So that was my interest, and that's where I first started kind of hearing about these trick sets. And I remember what Craig said in his video was he treats, I forget the exact wordage or the verbiage that he used as he's explaining that. And I need to go back and dig those tapes up and watch that again, because it's really, really good information. He had a whole series. It was three or four or five tapes there, and I had watched every one of those. But I do remember the point that he made, though. And he said that he does not go to his trick sets right off the bat. He said that most coats are average coat, or average intelligences, and do the same thing that most average coats do. He said that he really believes, as do I, that there are a few coats that are super smart, you know, and I think that they are have a higher intelligence. If there was such a thing as a, and to my knowledge, there's not, but if there's such a thing as a IQ test for coats, I think there would be a handful of them that are a whole lot smarter than others. I differ from Craig in my trapping a whole lot. One, Craig's forgotten more about a coat than I'll probably ever know in my life. But he is one of my heroes in the trapping world, and he's was absolutely and still is a brilliant coat trapper. And he traps in a whole different region of the world that I do. He's you know, he's out west and I'm in the deep south, and he traps pretty much year round, where I am not, I do not trap through the summer months. Actually, when I get to mid-spring, I'll stop and I don't start again typically until the second half of the fall on average years, just because we're so hot and it's miserable trapping in Mississippi in the summertime. So I have before, but that's not something I enjoy or I look to do. But at any rate, I will incorporate some of these sneaky sets or some of these trick sets into my arsenal. And I'm not going to tell you all of them that I use, but I will tell you a few of them and some that are pretty easy to understand. And here again, this is radio, so I'm going to have to describe these. And we'll just go over three or four of these here. And how's our time running? Yeah, we're in good shape. We'll cover two or three and we'll talk about those. I'm going to pause here and wet my whistle one more time. He's already warming up. We're in the low 80s in Mississippi right now. I know some of you guys up north and out in the mountainous states out west, I see you're getting a snowstorm today and tomorrow, so you probably don't appreciate me talking about being 82 degrees when I walk in. All right. I don't set, as a general rule, just a ton load of dirt hole sets. I do early. I'm probably will set 60% of my sets will be dirt holes in the early season where there's a lot of pups running around. Pups are super inquisitive, and a lot of times that flashy dirt hole is all it takes just to get that inquisitive little coat pup over there to take a look at it. Come check you out, get caught, bam. Occasionally, when that coat shows you he's smart, this particular trick set or sneaky set that I call it, I kind of take Craig's advice on. I don't use it until coats to show me that I'm dealing with a smart coat. Most of the time, you have something, some way, form or fashion of how you set up a dirt hole. You know, there's that whole 9-2 or 10-3 or that, all that stuff. I don't use any of that, but I do put it where I think the trap needs to go. And that's just something that I can't really put in words. When I get on my knees and I got my hole and I look at it and I try to be the coyote, then it goes right there. Right there may be at 10-2 to the right. It may be 4 inches to the left and back kind of close to the hole. It may be because of the depression in the ground that's leading up to it. I may have that trap 14, 16, 18 inches away from the hole. It just depends on what that particular micro location looks like and where I think the coyote's approach is going to be. And it's just a gut feel kind of thing. It took me a couple of 2 or 3 years to get to where I could just kind of read the ground and read those patterns. And sometimes I'll put it way out there. I showed this to students. I remember a student that I had last year that he kept the first 2 or 3 sets. My trap was 16, 18 inches away from the track net. And he says, man, he said, I know you said, you know, you're not fox trapping, but golly, you know, he said, this is, you know, I've never dreamed of setting them back as far. I said, well, I don't every time, but on these particular sets, this is just where I feel like the coyote's coming through. It may be, I remember a trap I set this year. There were some little prickly pear cactus all around there on either side, and it was natural. I didn't put it there. It was already there. And the only real direction without getting a big old sharp long thorn in the coyote's foot was I needed to set that trap back about 17 or 18 inches away from the attractant. And so that's what I did. So back to the sneaky set things. When I see a coyote go to the backside, and I think this happens way more often than we realize. I actually got 2 thoughts in my mind. Let me finish the first one up first, and I'll come back to the dirt hole sneaky set. Later on in the season, when I get to midway of the season, when the pups are pretty much on their own, dispersal's over with, coyotes are for the most part, are all adult coyotes now anyway. Even the pups are their adolescent age, but they are about to take mates and start breeding and establish their own families and that sort of thing, doing stuff adult coyotes do, grown-up coyotes do. When we get to that point of the season, I get back to no more than 50-50 dirt holes, if not even. I'm a flat set guy. I love flat sets. That's what I do. That's how I built my whole style of trapping. I'm a flat set guy. A really, really well blended in flat set is what I set most of the lion's shares of my coyote traps as. So typically later in the season, now I always mix in a few. The last job I did just a week or two ago, I still had probably 5 or 10% dirt holes. Now I was 90 to 95% flat sets. But I still like to have a variety out there, and just because of inquisitive nature of a coyote, that dirt hole is still a great go-to set. You need to know it. You need to get proficient at it. You need to get where you can pop one of those in if you're a coyote trapper, because it is absolutely a producer. I've just found a few things that may produce, you know, a little better at different times. So now back to my sneaky set. Depending on which dirt hole I'm setting, if that's an early season dirt hole where I think we're primarily dealing with pups, or it's a late season dirt hole that we know we're dealing with adult coyotes, or maybe even post-rut, after the rut's over with, when coyotes are even more cautious, then I'll use these more. And basically, it's the same thing as where does the trap go, but I'll get completely behind the hole and bed the trap in. Sometimes, if I'm not running low on equipment, which seems like I always am, you know, if I've got a big job to do and I want to get 100 sets in, and I look in the truck and I've only got 20 traps left, then the only trap I put at that dirt hole may be behind the hole completely. If it's an area that coyote can circle real easy, because coyotes are by nature going to want to circle anything that they're not confident in. If they don't have full confidence in it, they hadn't seen that attractant for several days on end, they're almost invariably, if it's where they can, they're almost going to circle it. Now, that's where backing comes in real handy, and the reason we use backing, the reason we try to kind of make that more and more difficult for them to do, don't get too flashy with coats now, because you can bounce coats off of a set if you get, you know, have too much guiding or too much backing there. Make sure that's a natural process. The set that I'm envisioning is a dirt hole. Just say it's at an intersection of a two track, but it's pretty open on the back of that. Maybe there's a grass clump, and I put this big flashy dirt hole in the front side of the grass clump. But there's really nothing behind there but that one little grass clump that's maybe as big around as your fist. The coyote, very, very, very likely, his first encounter of that, he's very likely to circle that and approach it from the backside. Guys, if you don't believe this, set these type sets in snow or sand where you can really see the tracks and really observe your sets every day. See how the coyote's approach was. See how he worked the set, which direction he came from, what he did. You'll find that, I'm going to say, greater than 50% of these will approach the back of the set. It took me years before I finally had, it's kind of like getting whipped by the dumb turkey, you know. Coyotes were showing me where they were going. Where was my traps in front of the hole? Where's most people's traps in front of the hole? You know, when I finally started picking those coyotes up, I mean, I'm talking first, second, third night catches, I moved that trap to the back. Or if I had plenty of equipment, I'd still put the out front trap. And this is actually what I did to make a believer out of my own theory there. I would still bed a trap right in front of the hole like I always had, but then I would go back and I completely blend another trap in the back. Now, you know, that back trap is real important to be clean. You don't want to smell anything there. You don't want to, you know, use urine right there or bait and lure. That all should be inside your dirt hole anyway. Different uses of urine, I guess, but we're not talking about that right now. But several different things you can do. But that back trap, think of it like a blind set. You know, no bait, urine, lure. Completely just hidden, blended very, 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 very well. I do want to go into just briefly talk about blending, something I work with a lot this year. I went to a lot of grass clippings. You can save them this summer while you're mowing your yard. You want to lay them out, you know, on dirt or concrete or something where that grass clippings can cure, almost like hay when it turns brown and dry. That's the very, very important. You don't want to put this stuff up when it's wet. It will spoil on you. But if you lay it out in, you know, the summer sun, a couple, two or three days, let it turn, you let it cure on you, just like, you know, you were curing hay to put up to feed cattle later on in the wintertime, then, you know, as soon as this stuff is dry, you can bag this up, put it in a garbage bag, store it somewhere, pull it back out and use it. It's already come through a lawnmower, so it's real fine. If you got any breeze whatsoever, you can take a double handful of this, and I get 3 feet away from the trap upwind of it and let the wind kind of blow those grass clippings out. You'll be amazed at how those sets disappear. Totally, totally disappear. Sometimes if your grass is a little bit off color from the natural grass, I will oversift it with grass first. Then I will take some natural duff and oversift with that as well. Usually by two different, it's kind of like a camouflaging effect. You've got two or three different colors that are going there. And usually by that time, you've got some native duff that came from right there in that same area. Usually that set will completely disappear. So most of these sneaky sets are going to have that common element that it's going to be a trap that's a blind set that's a complement to what you've already got there. All right. So that kind of wraps up my behind the whole set that I call it. So that is basically, you know, either with a regular trap up front or without a regular trap up front, it's a blind set behind the hole. Now, the hole is absolutely, don't misunderstand me here, my dirt hole has got Boss Dog and Federales down the hole, and maybe a splash of urine up toward the front of the rim of the hole there, and, you know, and so the dirt hole itself is lured, but that back trap, when this is, especially if there's a likely walk-through kind of scenario, say you've got two or three taller tufts of grass there, it's easier for the coyote to walk through. It's kind of almost a path. It doesn't necessarily have to be a trail, but that's where I want that blind set. So that's the trap behind the hole set. The next one I'll talk about briefly is not so much a trick set as it is just a really, really cool set. I just ran across this one this year. take a chug of this water again here. I think I may have talked about this on Trapper Radio once before, but this is called a government set, and this came from some of the government trappers out west. And, you know, I think the reason that those guys, so many of them are legends anymore, but they were trapping problem coyotes year-round, and they learned so, so much really, really valuable information. And some of these guys have not been afraid to pass that information on to us. And so that's why this set is nicknamed the government set. Now, the guy that I learned this from is actually in shale country. And if you're not familiar with that, shale rock is, you know, it's relatively thin, seldom over an inch or so, but it's big, huge. Sometimes it'll be as big around as, you know, it's an office desk or something. You know, it'll be 3 or 4 feet long and a couple, 2 or 3 feet wide. And so basically the construction of the government set is traps on drags, at least 2, sometimes 3, sometimes 4 traps on drags. So let's say our piece of rock was, say, 3 feet long, 2 feet wide. How this set's constructed, you will move this rock, and I'll tell you already, I've done this with, I found at our Trapper's College earlier this fall, I found a 55-gallon drum that was old, that was on the farm probably in the 50s. For whatever reason, somebody looked like they'd run over this thing with a bulldozer. It was flattened out to a pancake, but it was roughly this size, a couple of feet wide, maybe 2.5, 3 feet long. And I immediately thought about this government set that those guys out there were doing with the shale rock. And so I constructed the set. So I dug a little hole. I actually moved the barrel, which I don't think round now. This thing's been run over with a bulldozer. It's a pancake, but it is a flat piece of metal that used to be have life as a 55-gallon drum. But I had just dug a small hole. Now, as I was explaining this, and this really makes a lot of sense, they would take a can of some sort, whether it be a cleaned-out snuff can or a Viney sausage can or something like that, and they would put their bait and their lure in this can. That's going to be in the center of where eventually you're going to place this barrel or this shale rock at. The reason for the can, and it was, they basically dig a hole so that the top of the can was flush even with the top of the ground, and that's just to preserve your bait and lure so the moisture from the ground doesn't come up and impede your bait and lure. It makes it last longer. That's the only function of that. The next thing they would do is take, sometimes with just a bare or a gloved finger, sometimes they would take a trowel or any kind of trapping tool, backside of your hammer, and they would dig them a little trench. Now, the trench is only going to be an inch, inch and a half deep, but they go from that can out to where their traps were going to be. That trench is just a channel for the lure to travel, because the shale rocks were flat, you see, so there was, it made more sense there. With my 55-gallon drum, there are a lot, you know, there's lots of places that odor could escape through natural air channels, even though it's on the underside of this thing. So the scores in the ground are the little channels where they're just to allow that scent to come out at predetermined locations. And, you know, that can be 2, that could be 3, it could be 4. You want to dig as many trenches as you're going to have traps there. So you want that smell from your bait and lure to be coming out from under that rock or that, you know, whatever you're using. I suppose you could use wood or a huge stump or anything along those lines. Anything that you can move, put your bait and lure under it and put it back in place. You know, that's going to be key. Now, the other thing that's really key to this is you need to be running traps on drags with this, because this is almost a repeating trap. If you have your traps on drags and you catch one, because we're talking about a pretty large object here, whether it be the shale rock or the barrel or whatever, you know, and just say you did, and I'm going to do the same thing as far as trap placement. I'm going to put it where I think the coyote's going to step. But let's just, for conversation, say that's 9 and 2. 9 inches back, 2 inches to the right. I mean, I don't do that, but just say this is the same one for everyone for the course of this conversation. That's where the trap's going to go, or wherever you think the trap needs to go for that particular attractant. And your attractant, we've already discussed that. When that coyote gets caught and he's on a drag, he gets away from there. You've still got exactly the same set and exactly the same setup, sitting there waiting on the next coyote. That coyote's going to be over there in the bushes tangled up. I use this a lot when I have a relatively open field that coyote can go, you know, with not a lot that drag can get tangled up in until he gets 30, 40 yards out away from that set. You know, I think what happens a lot of times, especially with coyotes on drags, or even stake down coyotes, you know, that mate or another coyote or whatever, they'll come back in the circle him, and when they run across another attractant, that's where you start picking up doubles and triples and quads when you start seeing that type thing. So this kind of gets you to that environment where you got one, he's staked down, but he's not right there. The next coyotes are, there's nothing at the set itself, the set location. The coyote that you caught is 30, 40 yards away, tangled up on a drag. The other coyotes, this one's mate, or maybe other coyotes that happen to use in the same travel way, come, they see this guy's, you know, freaking out over there. He's wrapped up, he's in a drag. They don't understand it's a drag. They're doing a circle. When they circle, they come across this other interesting smell. And you got, if you had set four traps there on this government set, you've got three more sitting there waiting on him. You catch him, you can repeat that again. So it's almost like a repeating trap set. And so I've actually caught a couple of two or three coyotes in those this year. And I really, really like that set. It's not really a sneaky set. It's not really a trick set as much as it is a set that I was a little bit new to, but I promise you, I'll be setting at least a few of those every year, probably for the rest of my life, because they're super effective and it gives you opportunity with, because imagine this, by the time you get the whole thing set up, you're a little bit longer than it would have taken you to pop in one set, for sure, because you've got to, you know, have something there that'll work, whether it be a, you know, like in my case, I found that drum, or you got to, you know, pick up a rock that's heavy and move over there and dig your hole. But when you look at it like this, you get three or four sets and with that same effort, then all of a sudden, you know, if you divide what time that takes by four, because you set four traps there, that's actually a pretty swift set. So I'm using that a good little bit. And I've even timed myself on the last one I made, and this is probably, I don't know, I've made 8 or 10 of those this year. And I spent probably 8 or 9 minutes there, and I could look back at my notes and tell you exactly how long I spent from the time I got out of the truck to the time I got back in at set, but that's considerably longer. It may have even been almost 10 minutes now that I think about it, but that's considerably longer than I typically spend at a set. But having said that, I got four traps waiting on him when I drove away, so now all of a sudden you back that down to 2.5 minutes per set. That's faster than my average, so so that's doing pretty good when you think of that, you know, how many sets I got and the opportunity it has to catch for multiple coyotes. I'll cover two more real quick. I'm going to spend more time around the walk around bone set. I've got a YouTube video up on my YouTube channel, which is just Expandapan. If you search Expandapan, you'll find my YouTube channel on YouTube, and we got lots of stuff up there. So I do have this walk around bone set. I think I called that one flagging coyotes or flagging for coyotes or whatever. What basically this set, a walk around bone set is I'll take a big cattle bone, whether it be a femur bone, a skull bone, a scapula bone. I want it big and flashy. I want to be able to, the coyote to be able to see that for a long ways off. I always take and set this on a really tight two track road with lots of cover on both sides of the road. That's what I want. I want the coyote to be committed on this road. This is his travel way. I want to see coyote tracks going backwards, forwards, left, right. I want to be covered up on this road. What I'll do, and I want a lot of cover, it's almost vertical cover. Imagine this. Imagine a waist-tall briar thicket that's really uncomfortable for that coyote to go out through the briars, but there's a clean two-track going right down the middle, okay? So what I'll do is right in the middle of the two-track, in the dead center of the road, I'll put this cow bone. And it's big, and it's bright, and it's white, and I'll put lure on it, and I'll put bait on it, and I'll put urine on it. I'll put all three on the bone. Now, I'll use two traps at least in this situation. Typically, we'll put them on drags too, although it's not as important. These could be staked down traps. And what I'll do is I'll go all the way out away from the bone. And I'll be 3 feet sometimes, 4 feet, 5 feet, it doesn't matter, what I'm banking on that coyote doing, he's coming down this tree track. He's going to be on the road because it's thick on both sides. Off the left side of the road, it's thick. It's a briar patch. On the right side of the road, it's thick. It's a briar patch. He didn't want to go through there and get cut up. So, but he sees this bone. He's got to travel this road, and he sees the bone. Something smells good there. Something's interested in him, but he's phobic. He's a coyote. That's the reason they called him a coyote, because he's scared of his shadow, cautious, and almost to the point of being phobic about something new. That bone has not been there the last 6 months. He knows that because he travels this road all day. It would just be just like if you go to work and all of a sudden there's a tree in the middle of the main thoroughfare that you go to work. You can still get around, so you're going to scoot way around. You're going to be a little cautious of that tree. The same thing the coyote does. He's something's there, even though it interests him through his nose, through his eyes, all this, and he may want to check it out, but the first thing he's going to do is circle it. Typically, when he does, he's going to circle all the way next to that cover, because what has always been there? What's he familiar with? He's familiar with that cover, very, very much so. So that's what typically he's going to do, is he's going to circle on either the left or the right. I don't know which side. That's the reason I always use at least two sets here. You could use four if you wanted to. I don't know if you're going to stake them. I don't know how practical it would be to use four. You certainly could try that. You might could catch a quad like that. I don't know. I never have. I have caught doubles on using this. But basically, he's going to skirt that bone all the way next to the, you know, to the briar patch, right on the edge, far edge of that two-track road. I want that trap sitting probably 4 inches off the cover. That's going to put it right under his feet as he goes across there. The traps themselves are going to be completely blind set again. Remember what we talked about before? We talked about how you use the grass clippings and all that. You do not want to be able to see where that trap is when you get up. If you can tell where the trap is when you get up and walk away from there, your work's not done. Continue working on that till you cannot see where that trap is there. If you trap with a buddy, the best thing, if y'all run in together the following morning, ask your buddy, tell me where my trap's at. If he can pick it out, you need to do a little bit more camouflage there. You don't want to be able to see that trap whatsoever. It should be completely, totally blended in. I don't use any olfactory attractant, no smell goods at either one of those sets except for the bone itself. I'm using the bone to basically work on his natural phobic nature anyway. He's going to see that bone. It's not going to freak him out where he's going to turn around and run the other direction, but what it is going to do, it's going to interest him a little bit, but very cautiously interest. I see it. I don't know what it is. I'm going to skirt way around to the side. Bam, before I know it, I'm wearing Chip's trap. You know, so that's what we're doing with the walk around bone set. I got one more that we'll briefly touch on after another swig of water here. And this one is not really a sneaky set either, although it could be used a lot. Clint's covered this one a whole lot. O'Gorman is the one I learned this from, and I think Clint did as well, called the Mafia set. Boy, oh boy, do I love the Mafia set. I use tons of these. You know, if it's a location I can't snare on, and I'm not a huge snare guy, but I'm after one particular job we had this year that I talked about a couple of weeks ago on Trapper Radio, it was not my most recent job, but I think two or three jobs ago, we got our tails handed to us in Arkansas on baited and lured sets, I became a much, much bigger believer than I already was in snares and a better appreciation for it. But all the Mafia set is a snare in the ground. If you don't have, it's a blind set, basically. That's what I'm trying to say. It's not typically a snare. We got some new guys here, so I'm going to be real careful that I don't confuse somebody. It's basically a blind set that you blend in the ground. Here's the construction of a Mafia set. It's usually in a trail. You always use two traps at this. The lever, say you've got a coyote trail that, say, what's it going to be, 6-8 inches wide, something like that. You know it's coyote trail because you got tracks going both ways in it. Typically, you can find scat through there somewhere. You know coyotes are using this. It's going to be a tight area. A lot of places, if you got vertical cover, you can hang a snare there and be just as good. But if you don't have a lot of cover, I set one of these on a job not long ago. I set them on almost all my jobs. But But I set one, and there was just no, I mean, what it was grass that was probably 3 inches tall, but they had a path beaten down at one particular spot where they were going through there. And it was, the grass was not tall enough at all to hide a snare in, or you know, but it needed something because the coyotes were going through there. So I elected to go mafia set. Caught a cat on that particular thing. It's a cool thing about a mafia set. It's kind of like Forrest Gump says about his chocolates. You never know what you're going to get because anything that goes through there is going to go across them. Back to the construction of the set. You want the levers going the direction of the... It's the only time I'm ever really particular about which direction my levers are pointing. But you want your levers going with the trail itself. And the reason why is to tell you where to set the second trap, because your levers should almost be touching. You want to bed both of these traps in solid because the animals are going to be walking right over them. If he takes a misstep and happens to step on the side of the lever, you want that trap bedded solid. You want the levers almost touching. You can leave a quarter inch in between them. The levers can literally be barely touching. You don't want to overlap your levers where if one trap fires, it's going to flip the other trap up and upside down either, because you don't know which direction the coyote's coming from or which way he's going to approach first. You can catch raccoons in this. I have set these for coyotes, and I've caught otter in them about a mile and a half away from any water source. I'll never know how that happened, but I've done that. You can catch beaver in mafia. You can catch anything that walks in mafia sets. The only negative I see to them is if you got a lot of deer, they're going to get tripped because the deer are going to use these same trails, and they're going to get tripped. Now, deer typically... You got these staked down or even on a drag, as soon as they get to something of resistance, either drag digs in or into your chain on your stake, then the deer slide right out of them. You almost never will hold a deer in those, but they're going to slide right out. But you do have to go remake that set. But basically, they're very, very well bedded traps with the levers almost touching. I'll typically leave about a quarter of an inch between my levers, if that. I mean, they're almost touching, but one trap can fire independently of the other one, and the other one is still set there. You've got a double opportunity, especially if you're using one of those products like, what is that big trap pan guy's name? Expander pan. If you're using those, the animal doesn't have a defense there. There's so much surface area there. You've got two different traps with two big old pans there. If the critter comes through that trail, he's about going to step on your trap, and he's about going to be waiting on you when you get back. It's just a really, really cool thing. It's not really a sneaky set per se. Now, lure, bait, urine, I don't do any of the above on these. If I do anything, a lot of times I don't even do this. As I first learned the mafia set, I was taught to use a coyote dropping right between those two levers. What that does, that gives the coyote a step guide, a little bit completely, totally natural. What could be any more natural than a coyote dropping if you're trying to catch a coyote? That's on a trail that coyotes use. You can typically look up and down that trail and find one if it's a good enough location. They're going to be there somewhere. Sometimes I'll collect them and put them in Ziploc bags and use them that way sometimes if I whatever. But you can use a dropping. It doesn't even have to be a coyote dropping. I've used other stuff that I found that, I mean, scat is scat. Nothing likes to step in scat. And so you can use anything there. All that is just kind of lines that coyote up where he's not stepping. The one place you don't want him to step is right between those two levers of two different traps, because he's not going to be on the pan there. So by putting a dropping right in between there, you encourage him to, you know, to step over that dropping. Well, his next step is going to come down the center of your pan. Either direction he goes, really. You can get by, depending on how much cover you've got at a particular location for a mafia set, you can get by with blocking him in a little tighter. Now, I wouldn't go do bobcat blocking if you follow me for anything with a coyote, even a mafia set. But you can do more blocking with something like that, that there's no lure bait. He's not spooked. He's not hyped up and worked up when he gets to that set. You can use more blocking at something like that than you can a really hot lured up, baited up flat set or a T-bone set or a dirt hole set or something. He's getting a little cautious when he approaches that. Not to say that he won't work it, they will. More coyotes are caught in dirt holes than anything, but he's usually a little bit more cautious when he's working those type sets than he is when he's working these blind sets like a Mafia set. I absolutely love the Mafia set. One of my go-tos. I have on almost every single trap line. I look for places to put those because they are absolute deadly. So, all right, guys, I have rattled on here for over my time. We've been going for almost an hour here of actual talk time. So I'm going to get off here. And like I said, if you don't mind, just kind of keep Clint and his family in your prayers as they're dealing with some kind of difficult things for the next couple of days. And he will definitely be back with you next week, good Lord willing. And I'm sure he'll explain to you what all he's got going on. But you just need a little extra time right here. So guys, kind of keep him and his family in your prayers. And I know that they will appreciate it. I want to close up. I want to remind you guys how much I really enjoy the honor. It's a privilege and honor to me every time I get a chance to hang out with you on Trappin' Radio, talk about one of my most favorite things. And tonight, talked about my two favorite recreational passions is the turkey hunting and the coyote trapping. So I certainly appreciate your patience and putting up with me all this time, guys. Y'all are the greatest people on the planet, and I honestly mean that. It is a joy when I get the chance to be working in this industry, talking to trappers on a daily basis when they order products and different things, and just great minds, great intuitive thinkers out there. The salt of the earth people. I love trappers. I truly, truly do. And I love having the opportunity to sit here and talk to you about these sort of things. So we're going to sign off here, guys. And so until next week when Clint is back with you, this will be Chip wrapping it up for Trapping Radio.
Hear Bo Cephas on a truck radio. Hear a turkey gobble down an old log road. You can see a white tail coming across the field. You can still hear that lonesome whippoorwill as the sun falls out of sight into a crazy country night. Bunch of buddies letting them big wheels roll, headed out to a party down an old dirt road. They'll be drinking whiskey till the break of day, throw on some old Frank, roll down the windows and let it play, and raise their glasses high on a crazy country night. You can see the stars shine, smell the moonshine, come get you some. You can shoot a shotgun, cause we all got one where I come from. You can get your good time on, get you a homegrown home, and that'll treat you right. Bare feet in the backwoods on a crazy country night. Hey! On a truck radio, hear a turkey gobble down an old log road. You can see a white tail coming across the field. You can still hear that lonesome whippoorwill as the sun falls out of sight into a crazy country night. You can see the stars shine, smell the moonshine, come get you some. You can shoot a shotgun, cause we all got one where I come from. You can get your good time on, get you a homegrown home, and that'll treat you right.
country night.